Hi guys, welcome to the Challenge Podcast, the show dedicated to transforming your life. I'm Coach Steve.
And I'm Coach Helen, and we're excited to bring you the best information on exercise, nutrition, mindset, and health. Let's get on with the show.
What's up guys, Coach Steve here, and welcome to another episode of the Challenge Podcast. Today, we're talking all about running, and I have a special guest with me. I'm joined by LJ Hilditch. LJ is an osteopath and a running coach. LJ, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So excited to spend a little bit of time with you, talking to you about running and how we can get the most out of our running programs and our running performance. Would you like to start off by introducing yourself and telling us a little bit about you and where you're from and what you do and how you help people with running?
So as I said, my name's LJ. I am an osteopath. I'm a clinic owner. I'm a personal trainer. I teach our budding future osteopaths at Victoria University as well. And I do running analysis, running coaching, and I'm also a runner myself. So more specifically a sprinter rather than a long distance runner. So I run 100, 200 and 400 mostly. Yes, that's a bit about me.
Okay. You said that you're really interested in the 100 meter, 200 meter and 400 meter, the sprinting aspect of running. How did you get into running?
Grew up doing lots of sports. I was quite active in general, but I did little athletics from under eight. And I just always loved running. That was probably my favorite sport that I played growing up. I just liked the competing part of it as well. With that, my dad is a runner. So he's a sprinter. He immigrated from Scotland and he was competing over there. And then he came to Australia and still competes to this day. He's 58. He's a master's athlete and he competes in the World Master's Games and stuff around the world.
Wow.
Cool. Yeah, no. Still going strong. So yeah, kind of a bit of inspiration from him. He's also an osteopath, which is pretty cool. So, yeah, so I kind of followed in his footsteps. When you finish little aths at about age 15, you can go to amateurs or pros, pro running. So I chose to go to pro running, which is with the Victorian Athletic League, which is handicapped running. So people run off a different mark or a different handicap, which is pretty cool. I just found it really enjoyable that there was a different winner every week and you could compete against some of Australia's best with your average Joes and everyone got a bit of a chance of having a win, which is cool. Yeah, so the VAL, you race all over Victoria basically. Season starts in about October and goes through to April when you race all over Victoria, sometimes interstate. The biggest one you might have heard of is the Stall Gift. Have you heard of the Stall Gift?
I'm not familiar with it. What is it?
No, so it's the richest foot race in Australia. It happens at Stall on Easter weekend and there's lots of different distances and everything from about 70 metres through to, I think there's a 3K race there as well. But the biggest race is the Gift, which is the 120, and it's $40,000 to the winner of the men's and $40,000 to the women's. So, yeah.
Wow, it's amazing.
Yeah. So it's a bit of a family tradition, you know, in my family. We've gone to, I'm 30 and I've been at 28 Stall Gifts in my lifetime. So we go every year. It's a bit of a tradition. So it's, yeah, it's pretty cool.
Wow. I love that there's a handicap in the running competition, just like, you know, you play your handicap in golf. So then there's a little bit of a level playing field, regardless of your, I guess, fitness level and experience in that there. And I think that's really inviting to a lot of people. If you wanted to get into a basic competition, you said that the shortest is what, 70 meters and the longest is maybe 3 kilometers or so. So they're not really big bouts of running. I like
that. No, they're definitely shorter distance. Yeah.
Okay. So someone like me, really naive about running, especially sprinting, how would you explain the difference between the 100 meter, the 200 meter and the 400 meter? Obviously, of course, there's the distance difference, but when you approach a different race, what's your mindset like? Like how would you prepare for a 100 meter versus a 400 meter mentally and physically?
Oh, as soon as it becomes a 400 meter, your headspace is just all over the place. I think when it's a quick 100 meters, you just, you know, I've done it all my life. You just get prepared, you get in the blocks and you just go for it. You've got to concentrate. But in pro running, especially the 400 meters, interestingly, isn't running lanes. So you're all in lane one on your different handicaps. So it becomes a little bit of a mind game in that regard as well. You've got to see where everyone else is. Do you sit behind someone? Do you go out and go around? When do you kick? All that kind of stuff. But I think obviously with the distance, just that explosive nature of having to just give it your all is where I'm at, the sprints. Yeah.
So out of the three sprinting categories, which one would you say is your favorite? Is it the 100 meter?
Yeah, the 100 or in pro running, the 120. But when you've got that level of fitness, like I think the 400 takes that extra level of fitness and dedication to training. And I think when I'm running a good 400, it's a good feeling. Like seeing someone run a really top 400 just gets me excited. And when I can feel like I can run one and go well, then I'm pretty happy with that.
So So my first question here is, if someone wanted to start running as a hobby or wanted to get better at running, what are some of the biggest mistakes that you see people make when they start running?
I think the most common mistake I see is people just do too much too soon. So they go from not running at all and then going, right, I'll go out for my first run, and they try and attempt 3K or 5K first up without any preconditioning at all. Or they say, oh, I'll just see how far I can go. And then they will pull up sore, you know, oh, running's not for me, my body can't do it. And then they give up, which is so disappointing because it's such obviously, you know, a great thing for fitness and for your mental health, and it's fantastic. So I think that's the biggest mistake I see. And I think it's important for people when they start, just gradually build it up. You know, me, I trained for sprinting, but I can guarantee you if I went out and ran a 3K today or 5K today, firstly, I don't think I would be able to do it, but I would be sore, and I'm a conditioned sprinter. So you really need to have a gradual build up.
Yeah. Okay. So it sounds like it's that familiar load management that we get from everywhere to weightlifting, to running and to sports. Some of us want to jump in really quickly. So what can happen if someone jumps in too quickly, other than pulling up sore, like any other risks that could happen?
Well, I think just as soon as you're kind of jumping into a sport and putting that extra load through a body, that's where injuries can come up. If you've not got that conditioned body, whether it be through different levels of training, you can still have, you know, doing something new can still cause aches and pains or potentially injuries, definitely. And with running, you know, it's an impact sport, unlike a bike, you know. Running is a series of single leg stance. You're just impacting the body every step you take. So it's quite hard. A lot of people think it should be easy, but it is quite hard.
Yeah, yeah. No, I can attest to that. I guess in the past, I've never been a runner myself. I've always been kind of like that overweight guy, and I've always been inclined to do activities where I'm not really running. And it was really interesting. Someone actually challenged me to a marathon, right? And this was after an ACL reconstruction. Oh my God. So here I am, and I'm like, oh yeah, like I reckon I could run a marathon. Like, how hard could it be? And I guess I'm quite competitive myself. And once I got cleared by a physio to start running, I thought, okay, like let's go for a run. How bad could it be? And I guess I've got that mental mindset of just keep going type thing. So the first run after my ACL reconstruction, I ran a very long 5K, right? It took me a very long time, but I ran it. And I got home and I was feeling really joyful and I was excited. And I was like, yeah, that wasn't that bad. Oh, yeah, I'm a little bit sore. Sure, that was okay. But I think you can see what's about to happen, because the next day I woke up and, oh my God, my calves were like I couldn't put weight on my feet. And I think a lot of people have experienced that, where maybe when you're running, you've got that mental will to keep on going. Maybe you've got experience with running in the past, so your brain says it's fine, but your body may not catch up to you yet. So you go and run and then you experience that DOMS or maybe even a grade one strain afterwards, which can be disheartening because, like what you said, you end up giving up.
Or definitely.
But running, you can definitely just kind of go from like nothing to just, oh, I can just keep on going, you know?
Yeah. I think that was your first mistake, making silly bets like that.
Well, I want to make it clear, I ran that marathon and after...
Oh. Yeah.
Less than 10 weeks of training, I went from never running at all to running the Melbourne Marathon a couple of years ago.
You're proving all my answers right then.
LJ, talking about running long distances, when you're preparing for, let's say, a 400-meter sprint, what does a good training plan look like for a 400-meter sprint? Like, what are the principles around a training program when you're preparing for that?
I think 400 really is that element, that kind of middle ground between having that endurance and also having that explosive power, especially with a 400. So I think when we increase our training for 400 opposed to the sprint, we do a lot more 300, 400, 500 reps. So really trying to get that endurance aspect or that kind of anaerobic endurance aspect for a sprinter. We tend not to do too many reps over 400 a lot of the time. So, you know, if you're training for a 5K, for instance, you're not going to go out and do a 10K. We tend to keep it at the 400 mark, but also changing our intensities throughout the 400 as well. So whether you break the 400 down into four 100 blocks and you time it, so you make your first 100 a particular time that you have to hit, then you go a bit slower for the second 100, third 100, then you have to kick home for the last 100. So just changing the intensities within that 400 meters as well. Mm-hmm. But it is a mental game on race day as well, that 400, I think. And I think a lot of 400 runners will attest to that. You can have done a lot of your training, but that mindset game in that last 100 meters is really important.
Yeah. Okay, so you're saying that running a 400 meter, you kind of break down the stages of the 400, you alter the tempo throughout, and you kind of play around with 200 meter bursts and 100 meter bursts and 300 meter bursts. Is that correct?
Yeah, and to be honest, that could be a way that, because my dad is my coach and we all run, he coaches a squad of about 18 pro runners. So that may be a case for 400 in that, because we do run it in lanes, you have to have that ability if someone kind of pulls out in front of you that you can, you know, turn it back on again. The 400 where you're actually in lanes, it is just generally that endurance. No one's getting in your way. You've got your own lane and it's your own thing within that race.
Now, if theoretically you wanted to run a 5K, can you speak on what a training program would look like if you personally would want to try to be competitive in a 5K run?
Okay. That would be a hard one because obviously I am a sprinter. Mm. So I think realistically, I would probably have a talk to my coach, my dad, and see what information he has. Mm-hmm. Or, I mean, online, there's generally quite a lot of good information about longer distance running. So the most common one, the Couch to 5K, that kind of transition program. But yep. I think generally with any type of training progression, and I find this with my patients that come in when I mentioned before, doing too much too soon, is having a training plan that has decent progressions, so small progressions. Yep. You would know probably more than me in regards to personal training. Like, you need to find a trainer who's going to increase your sets, reps accordingly for your progress, for what your goals are. Say you're doing 30 seconds on, 30 seconds off, 30 seconds on, 30 seconds off 1 week. Mm-hmm. And then the next week, it's 15 minutes on, 30 seconds off, 15 minutes. That's too much of an increase a lot of the time. So for me, it would be, you know, mapping out your goal. If there was a 5K that you wanted to run, mapping out your timeline and going, right, where are my progressions going through that? Yeah, that would be where I would kind of go with that.
Yeah. So you mentioned the 30 seconds on, 30 seconds off, and we call that the Fartlek approach. Did I pronounce that right? Fartlek?
Yeah. But like a lot of the time tends to be random as well. So, you know, you call your interval training 30 on, 30 off, 30 on, 30 off. Your fartleks when it starts getting a bit 30 seconds on, 20 seconds off, 15 seconds on, a minute off. Like, it's very kind of random. But I think that kind of training technique is good to progress from a running, walking to get you used to the running.
Yeah. I think you said it, like, progressive overload, more likely in a linear fashion, is going to get most people to be able to complete the 5K. I think there's a difference when you talk about competitive endurance running or competitive 5K versus completing a 5K. If you simply wanted to complete a marathon, you know, you could just slowly build up some load tolerance and capacity, and then you'd be able to run. But if you wanted to do it competitively, I think the principle you said earlier of breaking it down into small segments, maybe you do some fast work, working on like a fast kilometer, and then maybe doing some endurance work, working on completing the 5K, and then some sprints, some fartlek training, some hill sprints, everything in between. So a mixture of strength and power and endurance. So it gets a little bit complicated when we start talking about competition, hey?
Yeah, definitely. And I think a lot of people out there, see, I'm a very competitive-driven person, so I go, right, I've got to do this because I want to win a race. But a lot of people out there just want to run to run. And I think that it's important that they should still be able to do that. With that said, I think they still need to follow some sort of build up. As I said, like, they might still have a goal, even if it is just a run. They might just want to do 5Ks every day. That's great, but they can't start out like that, you know?
Yeah.
It may be, right, well, by having small goals is really important in anything. But look, in the next month, I'd really like to run 5K. Then you work your way up to that. Then you'll be able to run 5K every day if you want. Or you might go, oh, I might want to run 10 next. And then you build up to that. It doesn't have to be a competition as well, you know, just getting out there and running.
Mm-hmm. This might be a little bit of an osteopathic question for you. So talking about my example earlier where I went from 0 to 5K really quickly and I had really severe DOMS afterwards, and, you know, feeling a little bit of muscular soreness is sometimes quite normal. How do you think people can judge their progression themselves? For example, if I ran a kilometer, I got home and I felt okay, but the next day I woke up with a little bit of pain. What kind of level of pain do you think is normal? And then what kind of level of pain do you think is too much and I've ran that 1 kilometer too quickly and I should regress my training?
Yeah, that's a good question. I tend to go on a 24-hour kind of thing. Like, if you've got a little bit of pain post anything, post introducing something new such as running, if you're generally a little bit sore for 24 hours and then it tends to go away, you're right to kind of progress to the next stage. If that pain's hanging around for 24, 48 and kind of 3-4 days, then maybe that was too soon or too quick. And I think if it's a pain that's interrupting like a very sharp pain that's interrupting your activities of daily living in general, then maybe double check it. But 24-hour rule is where I normally go with that. And we've all kind of gone from no exercise to doing something and, you know, you can't get on and off the toilet and that kind of stuff. But that DOMS type feeling, but that 24-hour rule tends to be when I'm doing my running assessments, if we change something or change that load, is it loading up another area? How long is that a little bit sore for? Oh, only for the next day. And then it went away. Perfect. We're all right to keep going kind of thing.
Yeah. Leading on to that, you kind of mentioned the running assessment. Could you talk us through like what you would do to assess someone's running? Are you using like a treadmill, some video? Are you using any fancy equipment? Like how do you assess someone's running?
Yeah, so at my clinic in Altona, we have next level running technology. So we're the first in Australia to actually have it, which is pretty cool. It's from Germany and it's a program. So what we do is we've got a treadmill, we video, we get our people in for an assessment, we talk to them firstly and get what their goals are, what they're coming in with, what their issues are and why they're here. We put them on a treadmill that we've got and we take a video from the side, so a side view and a video from the back, and we just get them on the treadmill running at a pace they're comfortable with. We're normally about 9 kilometers per hour, but we just dictate how they're going. And then we do a series of different tests. So we test balance, coordination, some strength testing, stability, flexibility, things like that. I think all aspects that are important to running. So I think I said to you before, you know, the difference between walking and running is that flight phase mm-hmm. and that time where both feet are off the ground at once. So that impact of single leg stance. So if you're particularly, you've got, say, a weakness maybe around the pelvis, it may be causing issues as you're doing a single leg stance. So we test all those areas there. We pop that into like a bit of a program, which then once we've looked at them and assessed them, we point out different things. So we slow down the video mm-hmm. and that's when we look at, okay, we look at every aspect. What are the feet doing? What are the knees doing? What are the hips doing? As an osteopath, we even go further up. You know, what are the arm drivers and the back and the head doing? How that whole body is working together is really important in running. So we do this with children. We do this with everybody. So you tend to find, like if you think about it, who taught you how to run?
Yeah.
No one. We just started running, didn't we? Yeah. We just watched people and we learned from what we watched. So, you know, firstly, there's no perfect way to run, which I think is really important. And when you go down to the tan or something like that and you watch people run, you go, wow, there's some interesting aspects that people have got going on when they're running. But unless someone is getting aches and pains from a particular way that they're running, then that's when I think it needs to be assessed. If you're running and you've got no issues, you might look a little bit wacky. Good for you. If it works for you, that's great. But it's the people who come to us who tend to go, look, I get a bit of pain when I hit 5K, or I feel like every time I run, I'm lopsided, or something like that. So once we've looked at it and we've assessed it, as I said, we look through all those different areas, and it tends to be very common that the information we've got through their testing on the floor with the strength balance, we already have a bit of an idea of what they might be doing when we get them on the trip, and it tends to match up. So say they do a glute bridge on the floor and they're a little bit shaky or wobbly through their midsection. When we get them up on the treadmill, they have a bit of hip drop that we see from the back, or they rotate their arms a lot. They've not got that kind of nice strong core control or whatever. So when we look at them on the treadmill and we look at their mat work, it tends to really make sense as to why they're getting pain in a particular area. Once we've distinguished whether their action or their style has contributed to maybe where their pain is, that's when we look at signing them up for a 6-week return to running program where we come in and we see them for an hour every single week and we give them homework. So obviously things can't change doing one training session a week. So we send them home with homework to do, concentrate on different aspects of their running style, concentrate on different, whether it be stretches if their flexibility was an issue or balance work if that was an issue. Stuff like that.
Fascinating. I want to talk about the kind of running and like the assessment of the running pattern. And I liked how you said it's a self-selecting movement. You know, every person is going to run slightly differently. And I think that replicates some of the weightlifting and exercise movements that we do. You know, there's no real perfect squat, but there are a few principles that we want to follow. Do you think that there are certain running principles, such as, you know, I remember in high school and like my high school gym teacher would say, you know, drive your knees up or kick your butt and stuff like that. Do you think there are general principles with running that, you know, we want to make certain shapes with our body that everyone should follow?
Yeah, I think if you really break it down to particular things, there's a really nice way of running, if that makes sense, like a really nice looking way of running, of having your arms in a particular way, a nice slight 6-7 degree forward lean, knees coming up, heels coming to the bum and that kind of thing. But again, if you got someone who's say a shuffler, and they're just shuffling along like the old Cliffy Young shuffle, and then you try and get them to lift their knees, it's going to look ridiculous. So again, it really just comes back to what we were talking about before, that slow build-up of changing things. So I think there is a really pretty way to run, but it isn't necessarily going to suit everybody. And that's my thing. If it's not broke, don't fix it. So if someone comes in and they have got pain, that's when we go, right, try and make circles with your heels. Try and have less heel recovery. Try and increase your cadence so that you're not got big lopy steps. Try and stand up a bit taller.
Mm-hmm.
All those things of what we're doing is only trying to, I guess, steer away the load from their sore spot. But with that said, I think when we do that, we need to be very careful, because when we shift load from one area, the load has to go somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
So we need to make sure, and that's why we do all the testing. And I think it's really cool as osteopaths, where I think osteopaths and physiotherapists and those allied health are really good at this, because we know the body. So if I shift it from the foot and move it to the knee, I need to make sure the knee's got the capacity to deal with that load shift, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So making sure that that 24-hour rule applies, right? How did you go from that training? How did you go from your first one? How did you go with your homework? Yeah, my foot doesn't hurt anymore, but my knees don't hurt, but it's hurting my back. Okay, let's look at your pelvis. So yeah, being smart with how you change someone's style is really important as well. So it's quite a finicky kind of thing to do.
Mm. Fascinating. You kind of mentioned a few different cues there, such as trying to be light on your feet or maybe trying to run a little bit taller. Like, do you think that there is maybe like one or two universal cues that everyone could benefit from while they're running, such as, you know, keeping their chest proud or something like that? Do you reckon there's like one or two cues that you'd recommend to most people?
I think using your arms. A lot of people don't use their arms. They just shuffle their arms beside them. And I think a lot of the time your arms drive your legs, which is a lot of people wouldn't be like, what? I'm running with my legs, not my arms.
Mm.
So I would say that I tend to get people moving their arms a bit more. Standing tall is a good one,
mm-hmm.
as long as they don't stand their chest proud, but still arch their back.
Mm.
So they just look, they're leaning back, because then they tend to be the people who have low back pain. But yeah, light on your feet is a really important one. Light on your feet, chest up, and use your arms. My other one is kind of keep your toes up a lot of the time. The biggest thing I find in people who come in, they're kind of running and their feet are hitting out in front. So they're in like what you would call a deceleration running. So every time they put their foot down, it's in front of their center of mass, and they're having to use all of their energy to project themselves over that. So maybe a cue might be keeping your feet under your body. You know, when you strike the ground, having your feet below your center of mass makes it a bit easier to kind of project yourself forward.
Yeah. I remember one person once described it to me as controlled falling.
Yeah. So, yeah, cool. Yeah. I like that.
So the idea is that you're trying to get your body kind of over yourself and you're controlling your fall. And that actually resonated with me quite a bit, because I feel like I was once upon a time in the position you described, where I was reaching my foot too far out in front of me. So I was basically like almost kicking the ground in front of me. But then once I was able to stand a little bit more upright and kind of like drive my chest forward a little bit more, I was a little bit more graceful, and I kind of felt like a gazelle when I was running.
Yeah, a gazelle. See, I told you, it's pretty running. It's a really pretty way to run.
and you said it before, like when you kind of go to places like in Melbourne in the tan, or you watch some, maybe the Olympics, or even recently the runner who broke the marathon under sub 2 hour, what was his name? Elijah?
Yeah.
It's lost me.
Chief Cook. Yeah. I don't know his name.
Yeah. So yeah, he recently broke the 2 hour marathon, which was incredible. But you watch someone like those runners run and they look graceful. It looks like there's no effort. Yeah. Like their head, you know, doesn't bounce up and down. It's like they're standing on the ground and their legs are just moving.
It's so smooth, isn't it? It's just elegant, smooth and elegant. You just said as well, you know, their head isn't bopping up and down. And that's another thing that some people do. They try and lift either their feet or their knees and then they jump up and down, which is more impact. And if your force is going up, you've got less force going forward, you know, less momentum going forward. So it is, there is a very graceful, definitely a graceful way of running. But again, I'm so pro your style works, bloody go for it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
One cue I've used a few times for some people is to try to listen to your footsteps. And sometimes it's really obvious that it's just thud, 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 thud on the ground. And if there was that external cue of listening to your feet and you kind of change the way you're running so you're a little bit softer, that changes, I guess, your running pattern. And I find that works. Definitely. But
Yeah. And it can also, when we do the video recording, actually, the first thing that we actually do is turn the volume up and we get the athlete or the person to shut their eyes.
Okay.
And you go, does one sound than the other? you know, and they kind of go, oh, no, they both sound the same. Yeah, they do. Do you think they're loud? Or, oh, my left one's slamming down. Does that make sense of maybe why you're getting that left shin pain or whatever? So even listening side to side, shutting your eyes for a bit and hearing that impact on the ground. So soft feet is definitely a great cue.
Now, talking a little bit about programming once again, you know, within the fitness and the health industry, we're a little bit cult-like. So, you know, people identify, oh, I'm a power lifter, I'm a bodybuilder, I'm a CrossFitter. And some people identify as, oh, I'm a runner. And my question comes to you is, do you think there's a place for cross-training when it comes to preparing for a running event, such as, you know, going swimming or doing some resistance training? Like, do you think there's a place for training different parts of fitness to improve your running ability?
Yeah, I think generally cardiovascular endurance and getting that endurance up is a great way. Bike, rower, swimming is obviously important and beneficial for a runner. It definitely isn't going to hinder you in any way as a runner. I think resistance training specifically for a runner is a must do, in my opinion, to reduce that risk of injury. We just spoke about it before, that the body needs to have strong muscles and strong joints. It needs to be conditioned to be able to do that sustained single leg stance for a long period of time. And even 5K is a long period of time, or 400 meters is a high impact, or a marathon is huge, you know. So resistance training, I think, is essential. And a lot of people, yep, you're very right. Oh, I'm a runner. I'm just going to run. And that's fine. But I think the runners that you see out there who are doing it well and are not injured, a lot of the time will be doing some sort of strength-based resistance training. I think, though, if you're going to be a runner and that's the thing that you're going to do, the best way to practice for that is doing the task that you're asking your body to do, so running. So I've always said if you want to be a runner, you've got to run. So I think a lot of people go, I'm a runner and I'm running this marathon, but I do 2 running sessions a week and 3 pool and 4 gym. You're like, okay, well, maybe we could decrease some of them and maybe increase your running, because that's what you're asking your body to do. So it's definitely not going to hinder you doing other stuff. I think strength is important. But, yeah, if you want to run, you've got to run, kind of thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd like to ask you a question more osteopathically now about common running injuries. Now, you've kind of spoken very briefly about some injuries. In general, what are some of the most common running injuries that you see in your clinic?
Most of the ones I see tend to be in the lower limb from running injuries. Plantar fasciitis or pain underneath the foot, very common. Achilles tendon stuff, calf strains, tears, you know, moving up the leg, more shin splint type pain in the front of the shin. Patella tracking or runner's knee is what they call it, pain in the kneecap kind of thing. Even sometimes depending, you know, foot pain, stress fracture stuff. But then I also see coming more up the body, that lower back pain that I kind of spoke about before, with those people who are trying to stand up tall and they're arching their back, or they're maybe carrying a little bit of weight in their front, you know, in the front of their tummy that they load through their low back. They're the common ones I see as a practitioner.
Yeah. I can definitely, from my dodgy training for my marathon, had my fair share of running-related injuries. I definitely experienced shin splints, definitely experienced plantar fasciitis or heel pain, and surprisingly, a lot of lower back pain, which was, I didn't expect lower back pain, but I guess I must have just been jolting and just thumping the ground. It was just that shock in the body. Let's say, for example, someone does experience some plantar fasciitis or heel pain. What are some basic steps that someone could take to improve the pain that they're feeling in their heel?
Yeah, I think first thing would be to get it checked out by a health professional. That's my opinion, obviously, as an osteopath. I think so, heading to either an osteo or physio, myo, actually getting a physical assessment for that person to maybe figure out what is the ache and pain. I mean, there's lots of stuff you can Google online. Oh, put ice on my foot, or I'll tape my foot, or, you know, go to a health professional who knows what they're talking about. That's best practice. They tend to be able to help you with either that acute management or rehab if need be. Other things, looking at what we spoke about before, your load management. You know, did I progress too quickly? Did I have a new pair of runners? Was I sitting at work all day and then decided, you know, I had a real big day at work and then decided to go for a run and didn't warm up? Did I, you know, I've been training on grass and then I went to this real hard footy oval because I was away for work and that's probably caused it, or, you know, so looking at maybe why you're getting it, but seeing a health professional will be able to help you, and then obviously getting a running assessment from someone who's either a running coach or someone who does running assessments is a great idea as well.
Yeah, no, I'm glad you said that, because I feel like there are many of us out there who kind of look for that quick fix, and sometimes we feel that there's going to be a very quick fix that we can find the exact thing that's going to solve all our problems, and we might end up going and buying a pair of orthotics from a local chemist or going and getting like the frozen water bottle and rolling it on our heel or something in between. But if you are experiencing any sort of lower limb pain or any pain in your body, we would recommend that you go and seek some advice from a registered healthcare professional, because the problem may not be starting in your heel. The heel pain that you have may be coming from your hips or your lower back or all the way up in the middle of your spine area. So there's no real quick fixes when it comes to certain injuries. But I think at the end of the day, it always kind of seems to fall back on load management. So a lot of times it's kind of we do too much too quickly and our body kind of tells us to stop. And it's like our warning sign, you know?
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's where people can be driven away from running, which is so sad. They kind of, well, I've tried it a few times now and I keep getting injured. It's like, it might be happening for a really simple reason. So go and get someone to look at it, get someone to assess it. You know, take a video of yourself running and see what you look like. You might not be able to give yourself the advice, but you might go, oh, I look a bit funny. Maybe I will get an assessment. I think trying to fix stuff yourself is great. It might be a little bit of ice under the foot for your plantar fascia, but it could be an underlying stress fracture, which isn't healing and might need a bit more care and love than just an ice pack. So I think get to that professional and find out what it is, and then you'll know the best way to deal with it, really, and get back to running.
I have another story time for you, LJ. So
excellent.
While I was preparing for my marathon, I had really bad bouts of plantar fasciitis or heel pain. I was running in some really old shoes and a friend of mine said, hey, Steve, why don't you go and get some new shoes? And I thought, oh yeah, that's my problem, right? So I went to Athlete's Foot at a local shopping center and I thought, oh yeah, I'll get one of those fancy foot assessments on one of those like weight plate things. And they fit me with a pair of Brooks runners and I put them on and it felt like I was wearing like a cloud. Like it was amazing. It was like soft. And like the running after that was just like, I can't describe it. Like it was cushiony. My feet felt comfortable. It was amazing. It was like plantar fasciitis pain went away instantly for me. And I was like, oh, this is incredible. And I think because I had so much support on my foot. And then after my marathon, I read a book by Charles McDougall, the book Born to Run. I don't know if you've read it.
Yeah.
And it's all about
it.
Yeah, it's all about barefoot running and how runners may not lead to great running patterns and such. And we should all be running barefoot. And that's what the whole premise of the book is. So I guess my question is to you about shoes and what would you recommend for people to do, because there's so much noise around what shoes to wear. Should I buy a pair of Nikes or a pair of ASICs, or should I run barefoot, or do I need really supportive shoes? What advice would you give someone if they had that question for you?
Interesting, because I have story time also. Growing up when I was doing athletics, I had shin pain, real bad shin splints, and I was the same. Went and got my little foot assessment and they put me in a pair of ASICs and shin pain was gone. So I think shoes can definitely play a big part in your running and comfort. I don't recommend any particular brand to my patients because I think is, again, what we spoke about before in what suits you and your body. Mm-hmm. I get my patients who have got issues, I get them to go and get their foot assessed at, now there might be some through inner city Melbourne, but we go to the running company in Yarraville mm-hmm. and they have one in Geelong as well. And they are a shoe shop that's run by runners and they assess you on a treadmill. So they actually video a picture of your feet in your old runners. Mm-hmm. Barefoot, and then they also put you in a few different pairs of runners that they stock and they get you in something that's quite comfortable. They're actually really fantastic. But again, you need to find what works for you and what you're comfortable in. So if you're currently in, say, a high support shoe, then mm-hmm. and you're comfortable, stick to a high support shoe. If you're in a low support shoe and it works for you, then stick to that. But you're right in saying about the barefoot running epidemic that kind of came through and everyone's like, we must go to barefoot. And I'm all for it. If it works for you, go for it. Like whatever works. But I think the problem that I see with people, again, is that they do it too quickly. They just go from a high support shoe to wearing toe shoes or running barefoot and then they're in agony. And it's that load management again. Your foot has been used to a cushion under your heel and a cushion, you know, a particular level drop from your heel counter to your toe counter. And your body has, I guess, become accustomed to a certain support from the bottom up, and then you go to it having to have no support, your foot will change position. It will change its load up your knee, up your hip, up your back. And I think the main issue that that minimalist shoe or barefoot running thing had was that they maybe didn't give enough advice on how long it takes to, you can sometimes, I mean, I've read a few research papers on it as well. And one said that it can take up to 12 months to do it properly. And that's going from a full support to a real minimalist shoe. So don't be disappointed if you've tried it and it didn't work for the first month. So maybe get a bit more of a program into, similar with what we said before about going from no running to 5K. It might be the same with your shoe if you want to go to a minimalist shoe, but find what's comfortable for you and stick to it.
I think we kind of forget that our feet have muscles too. And if we do spend a lot of time in really supportive shoes or even orthotics, we kind of lose that connection with the muscles in our feet. And I'm actually a pro advocate of freeing the toe. And I'm really cool. I'm really cool. I actually have those toe shoes and I wear them to the gym. I get some fresh looks from people. And when I need to run to like Coles before I go home after the gym, people look at me weird. But yeah, I'm that guy that wears the toe shoes. Yeah. But my experiences is that my calves, you know, I experienced DOMS or that pain after just from wearing those shoes for a day out and about doing my things. So I think a lot of us have very chronically weak feet. And I start to question what effect that has on our whole body because we walk around all day as well. But I'm not advocating that you need to go out and go get some fresh touch. But yeah, I think we should all consider the strength of our feet in some aspect.
Most definitely. And I mean, even with the strength in your feet, when you have a certain amount of cushion under your foot, your little proprioception, your little feeling pads in your feet are actually diminished as well. So balance can sometimes become an issue with wearing shoes all the time. So I'm also a big advocate of get your shoes off a lot and really, you know, free the toe in that regard. Walk around in bare feet, test your foot muscles, test your balance. But for someone who is taking up running, like just go with what's comfortable initially. And if you want to go to that, you obviously had some sort of transition from wearing your Brooks, you know, to going to the toe shoe. It didn't just happen overnight. So I think progressing it well is the important part.
Yeah. Well, LJ, we've covered a lot of topics here. So let's wrap it up for now. If someone has any questions about running for you, how could someone contact you if they have any questions about running?
As I said, I'm at the osteopathic clinic in Altona, which is in the western suburbs of Melbourne. So there's my email. I'm happy to take emails, laura-jane@theosteopathicclinic.com.au. We've got a really great team there. We've got 10 osteopaths, a myotherapist, a podiatrist. Obviously, we do our next level running assessment. We've got Facebook, so the Osteopathic Clinic on Facebook, or I'm personally on Instagram as well at lj.the.osteo. So feel free to reach out. I post lots of videos on there about running and just generally what I'm up to. So
yeah. I was going to say, if you're interested in running, go follow LJ on Instagram. She has lots of videos of her running and even some of her clients and people that you train with running. So LJ, thank you so much for being part of the Challenge podcast. And I hope that I get to see you sometime soon.
Thanks so much, Steve.
Thanks for listening, guys. If you like the show, share it with a friend or leave us a review on iTunes to help us spread the good word.
See you next time.